This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by FRP Games, where you get discounts of 20 to 90% off. Find a link to them through thetomeshow.com. And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
My name is Harley Stroh, and I'm the line editor for the Goodman Games Dungeon Crawl Classics. And you are about to enter a dungeon of the Vorpal Network. Snickeder snack. Roll for initiative.
Hi, this is Jon from Norway, one of many international listeners, and you are listening to The Tome.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 133. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, I'm going to delve deeply into the heart of the world, talk a king into giving me his daughter to do what I will with, and find an old book at the top of the world, guarded by a million deadly traps in this, The Tome Show Skill Challenge Special. In this episode, I'm bringing you two more segments about skill challenges. The first one is with Quinn Murphy from the 4eatwill.net blog, where we are going to discuss some advice for actually running a successful skill challenge. And then we're going to talk to Tracy from the SarahDarkMagic.com blog and Mike from SlyFlourish.com, the DM advice site and Twitter stream. Mike and I give the inexperienced Tracy a hand in building a skill challenge, and then I come back and talk to her about a week or so later to see how it all went. But first, the sponsor of the episode, FRP Games, where my pick of the episode is the Freeport Companion for 4th Edition D&D. Freeport is one of my favorite swashbuckling pirate settings and a series of adventures from 3rd edition, and I'm really excited to see that Expeditious Retreat has converted the Green Ronin setting to 4th edition. The city and islands around it can easily be dropped into any setting, and FRP Games has it for nearly $7 off at only $25. Check out thetomeshow.com and follow the banners and links there for more information.
FRP Games is an online retailer specializing in all aspects of your tabletop gaming needs. Whether it's RPGs, dice, war games, or computer games, FRP Games has a wide selection of products. They offer overstock items where you can pick up all kinds of gaming gear ranging from 30% off all the way up to 90% off the retail price. Through our website, you'll be directed to their weekly new products, eBay auctions, or you can even buy your special gaming someone a gift certificate. FRP Games is an authorized Wizards of the Coast retailer and for 10 years has been committed to providing each customer with the highest standard of customer service possible. Visit our website for instant access to FRP Games inventory of thousands of unique gaming items.
All right, I am here with Quinn, the Game Fiend Murphy from the 4E at Will blog. And he's going to talk to us. Welcome. And he and I are going to chat a little bit about running a skill challenge, because I discovered as I was planning this skill challenge month of two whole episodes, it occurred to me that we built, actually at this point, a couple of skill challenges. We've talked about how to be a player in a skill challenge, but we never really talked about how to run a skill challenge. And I thought, well, who better than Quinn Murphy, the host of the brand new podcast, The Skillcast, a show focused all on skill challenges, to get together and talk about how to run them. So, Quinn, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back.
And let's go ahead and just dig right into these things. I've sketched out some ideas about what to talk about here, so let's start with the big question of to announce or not to announce. Do we tell our players when we're running a skill challenge, or do we just present them with a situation and keep the skill challenge mechanics in the background without telling them?
Personally, there's sometimes, and I know certain people have very strong opinions about this, but for me, I tend to go with whatever's favorite in the situation. Sometimes I want them sort of in the situation quickly, like I want to just bring them in the scene. So I bring them in the scene, and then when they make the first thing, then they sort of get the hint that they're in it. But other times I want them to understand explicitly that they're going to be, we're going to follow a different structure than a free form or like a combat or something. So I tell them right up front, like, okay, here's the skill challenge and here's what's going on. And I give them the basic rules in there. So it depends. But I usually stray towards telling them.
See, and
I feel very similar to you, but I stray the other direction. I feel like if I'm telling somebody who's running a skill challenge for the first time how to run a good skill challenge, I should be telling them not to announce. You know, don't tell them it's a skill challenge. Let them sort of immerse themselves in the situation and worry about what their character does, and you can sort of keep track of the mechanics of it behind the screen. But there, like you said, there are times where it's very appropriate to announce it. You know, I found, you know, for example, to give two skill challenge examples that I've run recently. The party is trying to find their way into a little pocket plane where they're going to find some old research in a ruined laboratory. But first they've got to get access to this plane, and you can only get it in certain places. That is a role-playing heavy situation. You know, there's lots of different skills, and they're running all over town, and they're doing all kinds of things. In that situation, I don't want to tell them they're in the middle of a skill challenge. I just let them go. You're in town. You know these are the people you need to talk to. What do you do? You know? And let them run and let them go. And let, you know, and I'll just say, okay, well, make this roll here or make that roll there. And I'm keeping a tally behind the screen, but I never actually tell them they're in a skill challenge or even, you know, how successful or not successful they are. I sort of just try to immerse them in the story and keep the mechanics out of it, keep the mechanics invisible, so to speak. But once.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, and it comes down to a thing of basically, you know, transparent or no, and then it becomes sort of like an immersion, like an issue of immersion. You know, like you're saying there, there's no real reason they needed to know. They could have thought it was completely freeform, but you have this structure in sort of underneath that in secret.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, you know, helped guide it.
Now, the other side of it was, you know, when I was, when they got into this little pocket plane and they were running around the ruins of this laboratory trying to find the research, I told them up front, look, this is sort of a modification of a skill challenge, right? There are many opportunities throughout the dungeon to find little bits and pieces that will help you learn what you need to learn. You know, your goal is to get this many. If you get more than that many, there's bonuses to that. But don't expect that you're going to go through this dungeon and find, you know, the book of research and then get out. It's scattered all throughout. So the more thorough you are in exploring, the more opportunities you have for successes. You know, in that situation, I feel like they need to know up front what's going on, so they kind of know what their goal is.
Right. Yeah, and that other end is, you know, like anytime you're changing, like my sort of rule of thumb is like anytime that I'm changing the rules. Or significantly changing sort of the frame on the scene that they're going to enter, I feel that I have to tell the players what the basic rules are. You know, I do a lot of weird skill challenges, so it's like I have to sort of tell them, like, yes, this will be different than something that you've seen normally because here's how it's going, and I just give them the basic structure and then let them, you know, and I find that usually works well because, okay, now they know the basic rules and now they can sort of go back to being immersed within that. Now that they have the framework in their heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. So we both tend to say that there's times that it's appropriate, there's times that it's not appropriate to announce. Is that the gist of it? It's just a matter of knowing what's more important, them understanding the goal or them being immersed in the scenario.
Exactly, yep.
Okay, good. So that also comes down to – brings up another question of skills or actions. You know, a lot of times if a player isn't immersed into the skill challenge, they're not immersed into the situation, they maybe tend to lean on the mechanics a little bit more, right? Oh, well, I know I need to be looking for something. I walk into the room and I'm rolling perception checks. As opposed to, oh – there's cabinets on the wall. I want to search through everything and rifle through the pockets of every garment I find. And, you know, do we want our players to announce what skills they intend to use, or do we want our players to announce what actions they're doing?
Actions all the time. If you need to, and I was just suggesting this on the first episode of the Skillcast, but it bears repeating. You know, if you need to, you know, tell the players not to look at the character sheets. Like, you know, like sometimes, I'll find people, they're like, oh, what am I going to do here? And you're like, no, look at me. Right. And then tell me what you do. And then, what I usually do from there is once they tell me what they want to do, then we can then go to the character sheet and see what map, you know, I'll definitely give, you know, and part of doing that has to be that you have to be willing as a GM to sort of give a little bit and let them map to the best skill that could really apply to what they want to do. So you have to give a little leeway because if they really want to do this thing, but they know you're going to be strict about your interpretation on what it maps to, and they might have to use their worst skill, then you're just sort of exacerbating the problem. Mm-hmm. When you make it about actions, you have to be open in your interpretations, and then you get some really great actions from the people, and they map to whatever.
Yeah, and I tend to, and sometimes that does result in a player making a role with one of their worst skills.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to be okay with that if it's furthering the story and it's within the character to do so. You know, when the half orc with really bad diplomacy is the one that suddenly starts talking to people and they've got to make a diplomacy mm-hmm. check, that's okay. And because ultimately, as we're going to talk about, I think next, failures aren't the end of the skill challenge or the end of the story.
Exactly.
So I think it's okay to let them make a bad roll if that's the way things work out, and that, you know, that's fine. So actions every time, skills never. Now, what do you do as a DM when their actions don't really fit into any skills easily? I find it fairly common that I have to sort of fudge, especially because of the way 4th edition skills are trimmed down from 3rd edition. I have to fudge quite a bit to sort of say, oh, well, I guess we'll kind of make this skill cover what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just sort of accept that you have to do that, or is there a way that you sort of handle that?
Well, there are lots of different ways you can handle it, depending on what exactly it is. You can always default to a attribute check, right? So a skill doesn't really cover it, but maybe is that something that could be covered by dexterity, by strength, by intelligence? You can always default to that, and it's going to alter your numbers only slightly, and still gives you sort of the general feel of what they need. You can also turn it into a bonus to some other role. So you can sort of say someone's going to do something that's not covered by the rule. You can look and see if that will help either on their next role or on someone else's role. Mm-hmm. And you can sort of go, well, you know, it's not really covered by any skills, but I'll let you do that and then give this to someone else.
So they just get to get to automatically do it successfully. And for the creativity, right, they get a bonus to something else.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, because I was sort of thinking about that in the advice episode for this month that started off our skill challenge coverage here. I was mm-hmm. talking with Dave Chalker, and the skill challenge we built was a very linear sort of skill challenge where they were doing research and going through a library. And Dave mentioned, well, they could make a history check or an arcana check to figure out the way the library organizes things, because those are the kinds of skills. If you have those skills, you're likely spending a lot of time in libraries. And I'm like, well, you can kind of make justification for that, but are those really, you know, do those skills really mean that you're good at libraries? Not really. Mm-hmm. And I guess sometimes you just have to fudge it and say, but that's about as close as we're going to get.
Yeah. Well, you can always make that, you know, you could default to an intelligence check, mm-hmm. you know, or, yeah, you know, you can, yeah, I mean, sometimes you just have to go through and, you know, and one thing you can do here, one thing I like to do, partially because I'm nosy, I like to interrogate characters while we play and sort of try and bring out the character's inner part to the table, so we can all sort of take a look at it and go, wow, this character's really cool. So one thing you can sort of do is if there's something fuzzy that's not covered on the sheet, you can just ask the player about it. Right. And then you can sort of almost generate almost a spot on the spot flashback from it there. So it's just like, oh, well, you know, we don't really know if you're a library person or not. Have you spent much time in libraries? You know, and then you can sort of ask a trail of questions, and then you sort of learn, well, you know, the character actually was a huge bookworm. You know, when he worked for, you know, this other librarian and blah, 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 get a little backstory, mm-hmm. and then sort of feed that back into the skill challenge. You know, that fuzziness is I find a strength in storytelling. though it can be sort of panic-inducing when you first the first few times you run across it.
Yeah, that's right. It is. And that's a really interesting idea. I hadn't thought about that. You know, the character says, hey, I'd like to use my history check to figure out the system of how this library works. And you say, well, explain to me how it is that your history check it reflects your, you know, your ability to do that. You know, and then suddenly you're drawing out more information about the characters, and you're getting more background, and you're doing a lot of those things you were talking about, and that's a really good idea. I commend you for it, sir.
Oh, thank you.
So, they're in the skill challenge. They're trying to find the magical widget of who's it, and they're failing left and right. What do we do? They can't jump over the chasm. They can't find the nifty book. They can't outrun the boulder charging at them. What happens to them?
Well, first we need to make sure that when we put that skill challenge there, that whatever the results is going to be of them failing or even succeeding is going to be acceptable to us in the game. Right. So as long as we have that, you know, if they failed, then there's still some acceptable outcome, which the game can continue. We're good. So we've got that covered. Then if they're failing. So here's a super secret tip that I use. I don't know if I've ever seen it before, but it's something that I've been doing a lot lately. And it works awesome. So here's the thing. Players don't need to fail a skill challenge. You know, and I know, like, a lot of talk on skill challenges, you know, how do you get the characters to fail if their skill checks are too high and stuff like that and trying to challenge them? But one thing you can do is you can bargain with players and you can still tax them. You can basically go, okay, you're failing left and right. You know, what are you going to do? What are you going to sacrifice to actually make it a success? Right. You know, and then you can start pulling in other parts of the character, say, you know, you're a cleric and, you know, you're really like religious and stuff like that. Like, what if you know, hey, will you give me a use of your channel divinity for the rest of the day to, like, you know, generate some magical bridge of faith or something? You know, you can sort of expand on that and you can start taking sacrifices for successes. Yeah, and sort of go through that way.
That's a really interesting sort of house rule on failures. And you're right that it's important to sort of say the failures can't end the story. What they can do is add more complication.
Right.
And so I think that's a trick that a lot of DMs trying to figure out how to run skill challenges run into, right? Because first of all, you look at a lot of other parts of the game, and failure means that you're done. You know, you fail at a combat encounter,
right.
You're done. The party lost. You know, it's going to take some really creative DMing to figure out how to pull that out. So why shouldn't the same risk exist for skill challenges? I guess answer that first, and then we'll talk about how to handle failure. Why should there be that risk?
Well, that's what makes skill challenges great. That's what makes skill challenges, like, in my mind, one of the big, great explicit includes in 4E. Because, you know, in a good story, death as failure is the worst thing ever, right? You know, if you read a story, you know, the characters, you know, characters die, but that's not the default setting, you know, is set to character fry. Like, characters fail in all sorts of great and interesting ways that don't take them out of the story. And skill challenges are a way for characters to fail for them and not be taken out of the story, right? They fail and they're beat up. They fail and they get lost. They're hurt. They're exhausted. They're wounded. They're shamed. All these great things are sort of happening because, you know, it's great that those things happen because it gives the characters a chance to grow and try again and, you know, sort of move up and always, you know, this whole concept of failing forward. Into the story instead of, because the traditional way to do it in D&D has sort of been like, hey, there's a door there. Make a open locks check. You failed. You fall back because you cannot open the door, right? And so now you have to go walk all the way around the castle to the other door where you make the thing and you fail, right? And you have to just keep going through, you know, failure is punishing. in that, and it should punish the characters, but not the players. It should, you know, the players should be able to have fun with how their characters are failing in there. I guess that's a sort of long-winded way of saying, like, failure is actually good and it should never be final.
Yeah, and I would argue...
Or rarely be final.
I would argue that even in the case of a combat encounter, I don't play for the TPK anymore, you know? I'm not trying to kill the party. Because that doesn't advance my story. I like to DM because I'm trying to tell a story, and I can't do that if the main characters keep dying. You know, and there's a few times I can pull off the, you know, you got captured instead, or, you know, that kind of thing. But if you're having that much of a problem with it, then I think you need to reevaluate your encounter design. And I think skill challenge is the same way. If they're consistently failing and it's having a bad impact on your story, then maybe you need to reexamine how you design them. But at the same time, more than a failed encounter sometimes, or a combat encounter, a skill challenge failure can actually drive the story into more interesting ways. It's like you're watching that great TV show, whether, you know, whatever it is, and you're thinking, man, you know, it's following the formula. The good guys are in a tough spot. You know, the princess has been captured, and they got unfathomable odds to get through in order to rescue the princess and save the day. And then things just go to junk. Because I'm trying to be clean, but you know what I mean. You know, then you know, it's like things are really bad, and then it gets worse, and it's like, oh man, how are they going to deal with that? Well, that's when they failed the skill challenge, you know.
Exactly.
And that's when the story gets really going. That's when the story is really interesting. So
right, you know,
so make things more complicated. But don't stop telling the story. They failed the skill challenge. You know, in the case of my party trying to get into the ruins in the pocket plane, you know, I had a situation where if they failed the skill challenge, they had an option to then turn that into great. Now we were denied access to the portal we need, so now we've got to try to sneak in and do it illegally. You know. And that adds all kinds of complications because now you're breaking and entering. You're outlaws. You're, you know. It becomes a whole different story, but it's still moving the story forward.
Exactly.
Okay. So, what you've got the option of, they can succeed or they can fail at the skill challenge that you've provided or designed. What happens when the party goes sideways? What happens when they say, you know what, we're not going to go forward towards success or backwards towards failure or whatever in this skill challenge. We're going to go in a direction completely unexpected.
Well, I mean, it depends on where they're, like how big of a digression it is. I mean, you can, I mean, depending, you know, it's hard without, do you have an example of place somewhere where it might have gone sideways? Have you seen?
You know, maybe you're putting together a social skill challenge, right? Where they've got to go and talk to a bunch of people in order to get the information to, you know, whatever they need to do. And instead of going up and talking to somebody, they decide to go a completely different... Maybe they don't want to talk to that guy, or they kill that NPC. You know, instead of talking to him, they attack him. Now they've got to figure out how to handle the situation, and the source of information is gone, you know, or, you know, they want to do one thing, you know, they're supposed to talk to NPCs all over town, but instead they decide to go out into the wilderness and commune with nature to see if the gods will grant them a boon because they're feeling completely lost or whatever, you know?
Oh, that would be great. I mean, you know, I mean, it's going to be... So, one thing to always keep in mind is skill challenges can be brutal because they can sometimes, you know, and the more creative and imaginative your players are, the more brutal they can be, right? Because, like, you know, really creative, imaginative players will go very far laterally. You know, like what you're sort of suggesting here, like, hey, you know, you can go and talk to everyone. They're like, no, we're just going to go, like, you know, do a primal ritual and communicate with the gods of nature, right? And then you're forced to really give up what you had set out mm-hmm. and sort of roll with what they're doing then, right? The only other option is to put them back on rails, which isn't going to satisfy anybody.
Right.
Right, you know. And in that example, that sounds really interesting, right? So now you have but then look at the context of that, right? Really what they've done is they've traded a bunch of smaller negotiations with one huge negotiation, mm-hmm. right? And so you could probably, in that one, steal something you already have and then just ratchet the context, maybe a couple skills, and then the sort of consequences of that. And those would be the main things that you'd have to do on the fly.
Yeah, and I would say you could even, like, as a DM, it's sometimes you're hesitant to do that. Like, you know, you've heard the advice over and over again to say yes. Don't say no, say yes, but, you know. And so when they want to go sideways like that, you know, don't say no, say yes, you know, but make mm-hmm. it a little more complicated or, you know, whatever. But that the hesitation there is that, well, great, but I spent an hour putting together these NPCs for the skill challenge. Now I've wasted that time, you know. And I guess mm-hmm. as a DM, I often say, yeah, okay, that's fine. It doesn't matter if I waste that time, because otherwise we're all going to be playing here and wasting everybody's time because we're not having so much fun, right? Because we're putting them on rails.
Right.
And then more than that, that's okay, because they're still around this town. This town is still, or whatever they're at, you know, this is still probably going to be relevant. And mm-hmm. Now I have a bunch of NPCs with backgrounds. I will find another way to fit in some of them to the story.
Right.
You know, and so don't just crumple it up and throw that skill challenge away. You know, keep those mm-hmm. things around. But at the same time, don't say no. Let them go off and do what they're going to do.
Right. Yeah, you know, and one of the things with the emphasis on sort of actions as opposed to the skills is you just got to be ready sometimes for them to take actions that render the SC. It doesn't happen all the time. I mean, at least it hasn't happened to me all the time. But every once in a while, they do something, you're just like, well, I guess you won, right? Like, that was really clever. Bravo. You know, wrap it up in a, you know, like, you know, give it a bow tie and give it to them, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, if players are being really clever and being really imaginative, because that's the kind of thing that you want to reward. Because, you know, if you reward them, like, you know, you're like, oh my God, this is a complexity 5 skill challenge and it's going to do all this stuff. But then someone comes through the thing that just cuts right through it. Cleanly and simply and quickly, then you got to give it to them, because then you're going to encourage them to be that imaginative and that creative again, and you're just going to make a better SC the next time you run one.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to like that in like encounters, like combat encounters, right? When the players just like go through a encounter like nothing, it's just going to happen sometimes, and you just can't get too caught up in it.
Now, do you still give them the experience? You know, if somebody says, hey, there's a skill challenge here, but I've figured out that I have one power that completely negates the skill challenge, and I use it, it's done. Do you still give them the experience for it?
Oh, for sure.
Okay, yeah, I
agree. You know, I mean, if
I agree.
Yeah, you know, give them the XP, you know, again, anytime, you know, I'm all for people being sort of clever. If they can be clever, I'll give them the points. And, you know, that's just going to force me to up my game. If I know I'm playing with people like that, then I'm just going to get extra devious, you know, and it's going to be fun.
And I also tend to find that, like many things in role-playing games in general, if you know your players, it mitigates a lot of these problems, right?
Yes.
I have not had the party go sideways on me, so to speak, for a long, long time. But that's because I've now been gaming with them for a couple of years, you know?
Exactly.
And so I kind of have an impression. I kind of know what to... Now, sometimes they'll still surprise me, but not in a way that I'm not ready for. Not for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, early on in the campaign, when I expected them to go into the cave, you know, and then on there, and then have to go back out and re-enter slavery because it was that, or dig for a day on end, and then walk through into the Underdark, which is almost certain death, right? At that point, when they chose the Underdark and certain death, they threw me for a loop, and I had to say, okay, session's over tonight. We'll come back in a couple weeks and we'll have something planned. That was that situation. But they don't do that kind of stuff with me anymore, because I've gotten to know them a little bit better, and I know how to construct the story and the environment that I can usually kind of predict where they're going. So it's a lot of times it's a matter of, if you know your players, that can help you a lot in designing the skill challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know what to expect from them.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Linear or non-linear? Do you like earning your skill challengers linear or non-linear? I know I got a little bit of criticism on the comments of the first advice episode here about skill challenges because our skill challenge was very linear.
It depends on... Not to be too much of a politician on this stuff, but it really depends on what the skill challenge is. I think linear or nonlinear isn't so much the question as what is a skill challenge about. Certain things are better handled in sort of a loop structure. Other ones are better handled like with stages. Other things are perfectly fine. It's just like a quick flap thing. It's going to depend a lot about like the sort of shape of the scenario that you're able to that you're designing and that you're able to do that for. Having said that, my preference these days, like what I tend to find myself building when I'm building them, are just sort of I don't even know if nonlinear covers it. These odd Mobius loop shapes. I think of them less as sort of linear, nonlinear as sort of like algorithms for scenes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's so, well said. I tend to go with a pretty hefty mix of both. And like you said, it just completely depends on what are we doing? And is that a linear mm-hmm. action or is it something that you can run all over the place and still accomplish that action? And so I think that that's fair. Mm-hmm. All right. Any other thoughts on skill challenges before we move along?
One thing on the linear, nonlinear, an interesting thing is, I've heard a lot about when I talk with people about sort of the grind where people are using like a skill over and over and over and over again. One way to do it, and this is something a matter of structure, but then also in sort of how you're going to run it there, I find a sort of 1-2 kind of punch of sort of like there's some action like you're running from something, right? That's mostly going to be athletics. So make that athletics a group check and then sort of go, all right, put it in two stages. Sort of the first stage is things we can do besides running that help us get away and possibly give us a bonus to the athletics check, which is in part 2. Mm-hmm. And that's like a group check. And then if you do something like that, you're still sort of rolling the athletics in because you're trying to get away. And you're still doing the athletics over and over again, but it's not the same as each roll because you're trying different things and you're having different interactions with that one roll. So you've got a steady beat, but different things are unfolding each run. So that's something I'll add.
And that brings up a point that I've run into recently as well, in that I always used to avoid the group check, right? Because then you're forcing a whole bunch of people mm-hmm. to make a check, and you run the risk that as they're making those checks, you run the risk that you're going to rack up a whole bunch of failures all at once, you know? Or it's going to be really easy mm-hmm. for some people because they're trained and other people aren't, you know? And so you have to tweak mm-hmm. the C's. The mechanic I came up with, and I think you actually helped me design this idea for the skill challenge, is that I had the party swallowed by the purple worm as a way to get them to mm-hmm. the circus, yes. right? And while mm-hmm. while they were inside the purple worm, churning and grinding and what have you, as it was crawling its way back to the surface, I made everybody in the party make an endurance check every round. Every time that we
right.
And we sort of did, normally I don't do skill challenges in rounds, but in this case it made a lot of sense, right? You're all exposed to this. You all need to do something to not die.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever the case mm-hmm. may be, right? But instead of having them do the grind of make your endurance check and rack up a bunch of failures, it was make your endurance check. If you succeed, you get a bonus to your next check. If you fail, you get a penalty to your next check. So that mm-hmm. every other check you're doing then is gonna swing wildly depending on whether or not you got ground up inside the stomach of a purple worm. So I think
exactly.
I think don't avoid the group check, but maybe think of some more interesting ways to have those have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Any other thoughts? We've probably talked long enough for a whole episode just between the two of us.
Yeah. I think that's good. I think I've covered a lot of different things that I think are need to be or should be known and things that I like to do.
Great. And of course, if anybody wants to hear any more about Quinn's thoughts on skill challenges, he has a skill challenge focused podcast called The Skillcast over at his blog, which is 4eatwill.net.
Mm-hmm. And shortly we should be up on iTunes as well. I have to go and look into that, but we should be up there soon.
Great.
All right, so there was Quinn Murphy and myself talking about how to run a skill challenge. But that's tough to do if you don't design one first. Dave Chalker and I designed one that I rather liked in episode 131. But there are a million different great and exciting ways to design a successful skill challenge. So I figured I'd get together with Mike Shea, and he and I would help Tracy build a skill challenge for her specific campaign. So let's go over to that and see how it goes. Okay, so I am here now with Mike Shea from the Sly Flourish blog and Twitter feed. Welcome back, Mike.
Hi, thank you very much.
And then I also have Tracy. Tracy is otherwise known as Sarah Dark Magic over at the Sarah Dark Magic blog. Welcome, Tracy.
Hey, thanks.
Now, today we are going to help Tracy build a skill challenge. You've been DMing for how long now?
About 9 months.
Okay, so you're still fairly new to the whole concept of DMing, and you had some questions a while back asking about how to run good skill challenges and make them, you know, as interesting as they can be. And
right, yeah.
Those questions sort of led to the inspiration for what I'm calling Skill Challenge Month, which is really just two episodes, but still, the point stands. So what we're going to do is we have Mike, who's an absolute expert, and myself, who pretends to be, and we're going to help you make your skill challenge all that we can, everything we can make it be. So you're going to get to sort of ask the questions, and we'll give our feedback and what have you, but it's you building the skill challenge. You have to make the decisions, because ultimately we don't know what's best for you, the story that you're telling, right? You know, we can give our advice and you know, ideas here and there. But ultimately the final decision is up to any DM who's going to run a game. You sent us a little bit of information about your world and your campaign ahead of time. So let me just summarize it to make sure I understand what we're building here. You have a situation where a couple of nobles have been kidnapped. And
right.
The party's trying to free these nobles. They've freed one of them already. Is that right?
Yes, they have.
And now they've got to get to the other one. There's another character, this Robert Haskins, who they believe has information about where to get Sirius Dark Magic, which is this noble that you're trying to save. And you want to figure out how to run a skill challenge that is going to involve the PCs getting information out of Robert Haskins about where Sirius is. And that's where you want to go with this. Is that right?
Yep, pretty much.
Okay. Mike, do you have any questions off the bat for it to understand where we're going?
Yeah, I have a few questions specifically about you know, kind of framing how the skill challenge would work. And the first one I think is one that you brought up early on, which is, you know, I mean, you bring up expert in skill challenges. My problem is my regular group really hates skill challenges, so I don't run a whole lot of them. I run a lot of in-battle skill challenges, but not a lot of outside ones. They tend to start staring at the ceiling and reaching for their iPhones whenever I start to run one. So first of all, how much do your player – have you run a skill challenge before, and how much – you know, do your players enjoy them? Are they role players, or are they combat focused kind of guys and gals?
We have a mixture. We probably spend about half of most of our sessions role playing, and then the other half doing combat. But okay. We only play for about 2 hours a night.
Okay.
So does that mean you usually get in one encounter then in 2 hours, and then do the rest role playing?
Yeah.
Okay.
We usually get just the one encounter, and occasionally we'll get two in if we're doing like a shorter one and then a longer one.
Right. How big a challenge are you looking for? Are you looking for a one great big event that, you know, might take 45 minutes to an hour, or are you looking for something that can be done rather quickly to kind of get you moving forward?
I was thinking about something that takes 30 to 45 minutes just to try to get more plot into it and hopefully if they succeed, allow them a really big win. Like maybe they can find him somewhere where he's going to be alone and they can get more information and not have to battle all of his guards.
Okay. Now, I see a couple of different ways that this skill challenge could go. It could go relatively short, sort of what we're talking about here, where the end result is they get to find this Robert Haskins guy and figure out where they need to go. But you could we could also expand it out over more time. And talking to Robert Haskins is, you know, a midpoint to the whole thing, and the finale is actually finding Sirius, getting to where he's at.
Okay.
Is that an idea that you'd be open to, or do you already have a plan with how you're going to get to Sirius?
Oh, no, I don't have a plan yet for that, so that sounds great.
Okay. So it sounds like we could go with a scale challenge that's either going to be relatively short or one that's going to be, you know, maybe the majority of your game night with maybe an encounter at the end of it or in the middle or whatever. Does that sound accurate, Mike?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I was thinking about what Merle's during a skill challenge podcast he did a while back, where he talked about the idea of doing a whole bunch of interlinking skill challenges rather than one great big long one.
Uh-huh.
And for this one, for example, if you outlined a series of NPCs that the PCs might run into and then turned each of those NPCs into a small skill challenge, you know, this guy is easily intimidated but is terrible with diplomacy, or this other guy is terrible with bluff, but he does like diplomacy, or, you know, I mean, you can kind of build small kind of three shot, you know, 3x3 skill challenges around a series of NPCs. And then each success in those can lead to a greater success overall. That might be one way of kind of breaking it down.
Okay. So yeah, you could do, and you could even break up each of these little, because it sounds like we might even have you could even set up a sort of a series of mini skill challenges, and each one of those is a success or failure towards the larger goal. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So you know, each interaction with a particular NPC might be a small skill challenge, a 3x3, right, either 3 success or 3 failure.
Right.
So and, you know, based on either conversation or maybe even other ones, you maybe you're trying to rip something off from them, or, you know, you could. There are other ways to do it. And then each success for that NPC would lead towards a total number of successes overall.
Okay. So you can have a multiple scenarios where you run into somebody who can tell you how to get to this Robert Haskins guy. So, you know, it's,
they have some piece of information. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You figure out who one of his buddies are through a streetwise check. You head over to the local tavern, you drink him under the table with an endurance check, and he ends up spilling his guts about where to find Robert.
Exactly.
You know, and so that's one little mini skill challenge. And then, you know, maybe there's another one where you talk to somebody who's been, you know, who has been one of his bodyguards, you know, and so you can figure out not only what his routine is, but through this guy, you can figure out, you know, when he's least protected, you know, and so you could go through a series like that and then eventually get to Robert Haskins. Which could then lead into another series of, okay, now we know where Sirius is. We need to talk to this ranger to guide us through the shortcut through the woods, and then talk to this guard and figure out the secret passage to get into where he is. You know, so, and do a series like that where eventually you get to Sirius, and now maybe you're caught and you got to fight your way out, or however you want to do it.
Sure, and each one.
Go ahead, Tracy.
One thing I had been thinking about was that perhaps Robert was expecting some sort of delivery or something, and that the PCs could figure out this and either recreate the item or steal it, and then they themselves could deliver it.
Uh-huh.
Sure. Have either of you guys watched the show Deadwood?
No.
No.
Okay, then that won't work. So there are different, I mean, with certain TV series, is there are kind of different ways that a story can go. And one way is that there's a story like 24 that's really plotted out, where you know that they knew where the last episode was going to be by the time the first episode was, you know, shot.
Right.
And then you have other shows where, and I bring up Deadwood because I think it's probably the best example that I've seen, where you just have a bunch of characters in a town. And each character has their own desires and their own goals and their own backgrounds and their own reactions to things. And the show is just watching these characters bounce into one another through their directions and through their goals. Mm-hmm. And you really, what makes the show so great is you have no idea where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And I think if you build a skill challenge that way, that instead of, I mean, this is just a thought, you know, because God knows I sit down and plot out skill challenges all day long too. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, if you look at it and say, okay, rather than he has a package that, you know, he's waiting for a package that could be delivered and the PCs could pick up the delivery, you might say there are, you know, three possible ways that PCs could, you know, could get the upper hand on him. One way is the package. Another way is through extorting information that, you know, he secretly has. And another way is, I don't know, killing him. I don't know. So, and then you have different paths with different parts of the skill challenge that could lead towards any one of those three, you know, any one of those three directions.
Right. And I would say
and each.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, and each, you know, I want to say NPC, but it doesn't always have to be an NPC. It could also be a situation, or it could be, you know, some other minor skill challenge like eavesdropping on something. But each one of the other minor skill challenges would lead through successes and failures to one of those three paths. And maybe one of those paths is not ideal. Maybe like fighting him and killing him is the last thing you really want to do, but it's a solution. But the better solution is to, you know, not if you extort him, you know, if you get a hold of the secret drawings of him with his floozy, that's okay. But now you've made an enemy with him and he knows that who you are and what you've done. And then there's the best way, which is through, you know, through the delivery of this object. And that's best because you'll get away before he even knows what happened. So now you have kind of three ranges of success from, you know, the you know, you have the sting on one side where it's this perfect, you know, this perfect way of deceiving him, to the not quite as elegant way, but it'll work way of deceiving him, which is, you know, extortion of some sort, to just brutality in the end.
And I had the thought of, you know, if you set up maybe even four or five possible of those mini skill challenges to get to him, the more successes of that of those you have, the better prepared the PCs can be when it comes time to actually confront him. You know, you could have one of those, you know, you found his buddy and you drank him under the table and you figured out where he was going to be, and you could go after him right then and there. But he's going to be surrounded by his bodyguard. It's going to turn into a fight. They're going to be ready for you. You know, it's going to be a fairly rough situation. Or you could take that information, say, okay, now we know where he is. Let's figure out – now let's go talk to his bodyguards and figure out what we can about there and when the rotation is light. You know, and the more of these successes you get, the more advantages they get when it comes time for that actual encounter.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and another way is maybe you have a battle. Maybe you have a concluding battle that you know is going to happen at the end of this situation. I mean, do you have an idea that the party is going to be fighting Robert?
I'm guessing they're going to at least fight him. The big question is how many of his people are going to be around him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a perfect variable to throw in. So if you sit down and design the battle out and then design three different ways that battle could play, that battle could begin, and the number of successes or failures that you have in the skill challenge determines which way that battle is going to begin. And maybe the worst one is he knows the party is coming and he's prepared for him, which is, you know, going to be a really hard fight, all the way to he was completely duped and the party's in the room with him and he didn't even know until they reveal themselves and manage to kill two of the guards before they even do anything.
Yeah. I mean,
good about both of those.
Yeah. And it can go, right. I mean, it can go a fairly wide range, right? They can go after him early on, but he's in his hideout. He's surrounded by his defenses, you know, put in some environmental effects or terrain or traps or whatever that are going to be advantageous to him. Plus he's got his bodyguards, you know, or in the second scenario, maybe they catch him when he's outside of his headquarters, but his bodyguards are around, you know, so there's still a decent fight there. And scenario three, they catch him, but the bodyguards are on half shift because, you know, they're all out partying because it was somebody's birthday and the party found out that they were all going to be out partying for their friend's birthday or whatever.
Right. So, I mean, I think now, you know, so we've thrown a bunch of things out there, but now we're going to get to the practicality of it. One way to do it is to sit down with a sheet of paper and a pencil and draw a flow chart of, or you know, start by listing out half a dozen NPCs that, you know, with very brief, like, well, this is their name, this is who they are, and you know, real basics. And what I like to do is base them off of, like, movie or TV show characters. Clearly with the Dark Magics and Sirius, I know that you don't, yours are very original, but in some cases it's easy to grab names from movies or TV shows and use those as your character archetypes. You know, everybody knows what Snape is like. So if you have a Snape NPC, you don't even call him Snape, and your party might not know it. Your PC, your actual players might not know it's Snape, but you know. So if they act a certain way, you know exactly how he's going to act because we've seen him in seven movies or whatever it is.
Right.
So that's a real quick way to generate an NPC on the fly, is to just pick a character out of anything and then say it's that guy. So if you sit down with your list of like six or seven NPCs and then start to flow chart out, like, what are the successes and failures in dealing with these NPCs or situations going to lead to, until at the bottom of your flowchart is the three big battles. And then you can kind of follow the path of, okay, if they succeed here, that's going to lead to this, which is going to, you know, if they succeed or fail there, then that's going to lead to this. And it kind of, you kind of build this tree. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
I have the paper here right now. Ah, okay. The other trick that I really like, particularly for somebody like Robert, and something that you can do for some of the more serious NPCs, and this sounds a little, you know, tacky, is to, you know, close your eyes and actually imagine that you're in that person for a minute and say, okay, I am Robert. What am I doing right now? Where am I? What's around me? And what are the things that are driving me right now? And it kind of opens up different options for, you know, what situations could occur based on his actions. I've been running a game recently where they've had a villain that they've been chasing down for like 3 months. And, you know, each time, each game, I'll sit and kind of say, okay, what did he do? You know, how did he, you know, how did the PCs just hit a bunch of traps and old, you know, primordials that have been entombed. What did he do to get past those primordials? You know, and sometimes people don't care. They're like, oh, I don't, you know, he just got past them. But I kept saying, like, no, actually, he made a deal with the primordial and the primordial agreed. And, you know, there's always kind of these situations of how did the bad guy get to where he is and what's in his mind right now? And, you know, I think doing a little bit of method acting actually can come up with some pretty interesting ideas.
All right, Tracy, I know this
has been, cheesy as it sounds.
I know this has been fairly short, and we've given you some quick ideas without really developing in depth the whole skill challenge for you. Have we given you enough to at least get you started that you think you could put this together now?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and do you have any other questions for us? Because I did want to try to keep this down to about 15, 20 minutes, and we're getting close to that mark.
No, I think I got pretty much everything. Thanks.
Okay, good. So what have you heard that you are particularly excited to try out?
Doing the 3x3s are going to be great, I think, in large part because that way I'm not railroading the PCs in any particular direction. Mm-hmm. And they have lots of options before them, but not too many. One of the problems they often have is that if I tell them, hey, this is going to be the setup, do you want to try to come up with a really cool way to get around it and take a few minutes, they just have no idea where to start. Mm-hmm. So it's a good way of providing a start for them.
Good.
That they can build off of.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
Yeah, sounds like we've got a good start to a skill challenge, and I look forward to hearing how it goes. All right. Well, it was nice having both of you on. I know it was quick, and I'm not used to being on a recording for such a short amount of time. But it's time to throw it back to me, and I'm going to then throw it on to the next segment. So say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Bye.
And then after helping Tracy build the skill challenge, like you just heard, a few days later, she ran it for her players after designing it out the rest of the way. And a few days after that, I caught up with her to see how it went. So let's hear what she had to say.
Okay, and we are back now with Tracy from the Sarah Dark Magic blog. And it's been, what, another week and a half or so since we recorded with Mike giving you some advice. Is that about right?
Yep.
And so I thought it'd be fun to sort of, since I've got the chance here and I'm not putting the episode out for a few days, to get back together with you and see how everything went and see what, you know, we gave you lots of different ideas. What kind of skill challenge did you actually end up running? How much of our ideas did you use? How much did you change it and tweak it? Where did you go with it?
Well, a lot of it I ran the way you guys suggested, which was to do a series of smaller skill challenges and then have those determine what the end encounter would be. But I started off just a little differently. I created basically a rumor table and had them roll dice to see which rumors they got. And from there, they could pick which parts of the skill challenge they wanted to do.
Okay, so they did like a streetwise check or something to get rumors? Is that how that worked? Or explain the rumor table to me. That sounds interesting.
Okay. I just came up with 10 rumors about what's been going on in town in regards to Robert. And I actually gave all of them just a free roll of D10, and I'll give you the rumor. And then anybody who is trained in streetwise just got an extra one.
Okay. So that gave them the prompting that they might need to lead them to where they need to go in the skill challenge, rather than just sort of lay it out and say, look, here's, you know, people that you know that are associated with Robert. This was a way to sort of hint at it a little bit more organically.
Right. Okay. And so they could decide, hey, do we want to crash his party, or do we want to make sure his guards have plenty of ale when they have their bash, or do we want to go find his mistress or whatever?
Okay. So how did it all end up going? Was it successful? Were there some areas that you think could have been better?
It went pretty well. Unfortunately, with the way it's set up and the fact that a lot of our group has very social skills, there weren't a lot of like arcana checks or anything like that. But they all seemed to have a lot of fun with it. There's a lot of laughter, and it was pretty good.
So we'll call it a success, although a focused skill challenge on social skills. Is that sort of what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. And when it was all said and done, tell us the story. How did they end up getting to the final encounter?
Well, they decided that they wanted to make sure that the guards had plenty of their favorite ale at the party. So they went into the beer distributor and forged a document from Robert Haskins, the main guy they're trying to find, saying, hey, here it is, drink this up, have a great night. And the distributor passed it along to the guards. Mm-hmm. They then made sure the guards drank, and they left, and they went to the tavern where the mistress was, and they negotiated with her to make it so Robert couldn't easily get away. Mm-hmm. And so then she left the room, they went in, they interrogated him, and at the end, one of them failed their stealth roll, and so eventually his men came in, but it was a very small group and very easy.
Okay, so they essentially ended up talking to two NPCs, are going through two of the skill challenges, the guards and then the mistress.
Right.
And the result of that was that he had less protection and no protection at first, and that he couldn't escape, that he couldn't just sort of run away from the challenge, from the fight.
Correct.
Okay, cool. And I assume that the party was ultimately victorious and are now on their way to save the patriarch of the dark magic family.
Exactly. And they're trying to get out of town as quickly as possible.
So they made some enemies along the way. Perfect.
Yep.
Well, great. I'm glad it went well, and I hope to hear from you again in the future. Thanks for coming back on.
All right. Well, there is hopefully some good advice in there about how to run a skill challenge. I don't think it's the end of the story, but it's what I could pull together at the end of the month here. So check out the 4eatwill.com website, where Quinn is starting up a monthly podcast about skill challenges, the Skillcast. And then you'll be bound to hear some more great advice about skill challenges. And that, my friends, is episode 133. Email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com or visit the forums at vorpalnetwork.com. Review the show on iTunes or tell folks about it. And don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products discussed in the show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com.
This has been the episode wherein I crafted an impossible boat using magic I found at the bottom of a crevasse that I had to race a horde of lizard folk to before channeling the natural god-infused magical energy pooling at the base of the gorge to fly myself out where I found, recorded, and released episode 133, Skill Challenge Special of...
The Tome, the Tome, the Tome, the Tome, the Tome, the Tome, the Tome.
I'm on the wall.